This is KCUR 89.3. Statehouse Blend is a weekly political podcast from KCUR 89.3 that investigates the Kansas legislature and the Missouri General Assembly.
Introduce yourself, please.
Ryan Silvey. I'm the state senator from north of the river in Clay County. Have all of Kansas City within Clay County, plus Liberty, North Kansas City, Gladstone.
Welcome back.
Kind of area. Thanks.
We're glad you're here. Welcome to the production studio at KCUR 89.3. I'm Brian Ellison. We are here with Senator Ryan Silvey, Republican from Kansas City's Northland, and also with my colleague here at KCUR, Ellie Moxley. Hi, Ellie.
Hey, Brian.
Glad you're here. Well, let me start with Ellie Moxley.
I've been reporting on the Kansas side on elections a lot, and I've actually had the opportunity to go out with several candidates to knock on doors and hear what people are saying. On the Kansas side, it's a lot of schools. I've also been hearing a lot of questions this week about kind of what's going on with gun policy in the state, in Missouri, in Kansas. Where do you think we're sitting right now?
Well, I mean, of course, in Missouri, we're going to have a veto session in September, and the governor's vetoed, among other things, a pretty high-profile piece of gun legislation. So I'm sure that debate will heat up in the coming weeks as we head towards that. I suspect it will probably be overridden just by virtue of the number of votes it had when it passed the first time. But, you know, as far as schools go, we have actually been able to put more money into schools on our side of the state line. And while we're still not fully funding the formula under the statute as it's written, we're getting closer and closer to that and have not ever scaled back.
Our last guest on the Missouri State House Blend was Representative Deron McGee, a Democrat from Kansas City. Representative McGee said that his explanation for why the Republicans passed, both the House and the Senate on the last couple days of the session passed the Stand Your Ground gun legislation was that they didn't have anything they could really point to as an accomplishment to show their base, and they needed something before the end of the session. I'd be curious to know whether you agree with that assessment, but also his broader point. Were there any real gains for the supermajority Republican leadership in the House and the Senate this year?
You know, I would say that that assessment is probably partially correct. I think that's probably part of it. I mean, I will say it came up fast at the end of session. It was not something that we had talked about. That particular provision of the gun bill was not something that we had talked about all the way through session and said, this is a priority for us. We must get it done. I mean, it kind of came up quick. So I can't say that he's totally wrong in that assessment. As far as accomplishments, the longer you have a supermajority or even a majority, the harder it gets to accomplish things because you accomplish things along the way. And so there are so many things that if you look back 10 years ago that we've done, it's harder to find those things. Okay, what do we got to do now? What are we going to do now? You know, and for me, it should be focusing on the nuts and bolts of government, making sure that the government operates efficiently and smoothly. For others in their districts, it probably is finding those issues that get people riled up and saying, hey, we passed something.
Ellie Moxley, one of your recent stories, together with our colleague Dan Margulies, was examining particular aspects of the Republican gubernatorial debate and examining some of the claims that those candidates were making about Medicaid reform and expansion in Missouri. Can you talk a little bit about that? And I guess I wonder what questions that raises for you of the down-ballot Republican candidates like Ryan Silvey.
Sure. Our health editor, Dan Margulies, the day after our colleagues over at St. Louis Public Radio hosted the gubernatorial debate last week, he came in and said, you know, there were some things said about Medicaid expansion that I just don't think line up with conventional wisdom on kind of the facts about the Affordable Care Act and kind of where the debate stands in Missouri. So we set out to kind of check some of the claims from the candidates, and all of the Republican candidates are saying no Medicaid expansion. I mean, do you think that kind of squares with the attitude right now in Jeff City? Or do you think maybe now that we're starting to maybe see some of these, you know, the hospitals continue to lobby very strongly for Medicaid expansion. Where do you kind of see that going in the next session?
You know, it's going to be interesting to kind of go full circle to something that was said earlier. You mentioned that Governor Pence is now being a vice presidential candidate. It'll be fascinating because he expanded Medicaid in Indiana. And the plan that I put forth was actually more conservative than his plan. And yet, when we had that debate here, you know, I was assailed for that. And so if now the vice presidential candidate is a governor who did it, I'm very interested to see how my colleagues react to that and whether that changes the debate.
Does it disappoint you that none of the four candidates for governor from your party would support an expansion of Medicaid?
It does, in that the only way that you're going to get reform is to get a waiver, and the only way that you're going to get a waiver is to do some sort of eligibility reform, which would, you know, people call expansion. I think for their purposes right now, because they're all running in a primary and because there is a presidential election, I think they're all holding out hope that if they win, that a Republican gets in the White House and then the issue goes away and they don't ever have to deal with it. That's my personal take. It'll be very, very interesting if we elect a Republican governor and that's not the scenario, and we continue to have to figure out how to deal with the ACA as it moves down the road.
The four candidates for the Republican nomination for governor have some very different personalities, some very different backgrounds, in some ways not a lot of differences in policy positions. Have you expressed a preference among those four candidates?
No, I haven't, actually.
Would you like to do that here today?
Not a chance.
I mean, what's important?
I know them all personally.
Yeah.
With the exception of Greitens, I don't know very well. Bruner, I know from his last run for Senate a little bit. Catherine, I've known for years. Peter, I've known for years. So we'll just see what the voters have to say.
Well, I guess let me ask you this: What do you think you would advise your fellow Republican voters to be thinking about as they step into the booth and cast a vote for governor?
You know, I would try to decide for myself who I think has the skill set to be the best governor. I think too often we get wrapped up in sound bites and emotional issues, and we have this whole culture right now of the outsider versus the politician. You know, when you look at the outsiders that have been elected to governor over the last several years in most states, they don't typically tend to be very good governors.
The only candidate who hasn't in some way tried to present him or herself as an outsider is Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder, I think.
It's pretty hard to be an outsider when you're the lieutenant governor.
Exactly.
Like, governor's already in your title.
And, of course, Catherine Hanaway is a former Speaker of the House, but she hasn't been in office for more than a decade.
Right. Well, she was a U.S. attorney, too.
Right.
Presidential appointee.
Right. Eric Greitens has never held office. John Bruner hasn't either. They are presenting themselves all as, to some degree or other, outsiders. You're suggesting that isn't what voters should be looking for.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, lightning strikes once in a while, and maybe somebody who's never done any political job before would do a great job at the top political job in a state, but the odds are probably against that.
As there are many Republicans who I feel like don't feel like Donald Trump represents their interests and represents maybe the Republican Party they've supported, are there any conversations that are being had about kind of what effect that could have on down ballot races?
Yeah, you know, fortunately, Missourians tend to be, when they go into the ballot box, they don't tend to be focused on one party or the other, or coattails don't seem to be very long in Missouri, I guess would be a good way to put that. So as far as I'm concerned, and being on the ballot and the Donald Trump effect and the concerns that some people have, it doesn't really bother me at all. You know, it's my job to convince voters to support me. And with the elimination of straight ticket voting back in 2006, that allows every candidate to make the case to the voter. If they get all the way down the ballot and they look at my name, they're making a choice based on me, not necessarily based on who's above me. So I'm not terribly concerned about down ballot effects.
You think that Missouri voters have shown a propensity for being willing to split their ticket anyway?
Sure. I mean, if you look at, I mean, in my past races, You know, Jay Nixon has gotten the vote in my district to be governor. I've gotten the vote to be representative or senator. So people bounce back and forth.
I'm sure you've been preparing for this, perhaps consulting with your 10-year-old daughter, Callie. We need you to choose our closing song for the show today.
I did think about it. And as a fan of cover songs, The Ghost of Tom Joad, as played by Rage Against the Machine.
Sounds like a winner to me. Thank you so much for being here.
All right, thank you.
Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
That was an excerpt from Statehouse Blend, KCUR 89.3's podcast about the Kansas Legislature and the Missouri General Assembly. You can find the full episode by subscribing on iTunes or at kcur.org/statehouseblend.